In this episode, some of our Banking with Life clients discuss their exposure to the idea that they could control the banking function with the infinite banking concept and practical experience in becoming your own banker, as taught by my late friend and mentor, R. Nelson Nash. Now, these are unscripted and in their own words, so they may not use precise language, but they took time out of their busy lives and their full schedules to come and share with you. And I thought it was very powerful. They were very complimentary of us as a team, the Bank of Life team and some of the team members, you know, Jake, Julie, Service. And I do truly appreciate that. But those were also unsolicited. I really had fun with all of these individuals, and I think that you'll enjoy. Thank you for listening.
It was the day I saw you there at the convention center. I got the copy of the book there.
From Becoming Your Own Banker. Nash. Yep, Nelson.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. And somehow it just caught me, caught my attention. I read it till the pages were like getting all dog eared. It was a real mind breakthrough, you know. And that was by the time I'd gotten to see Nelson Nash in person, you know, I always sat in the front row with my eyes like this.
Yeah, I remember. I don't remember exactly how many times you had seen him, but I know that you've been to many events that we've held. Do you know how many times you attended?
I saw Nelson three times.
Three times.
And I was at a couple other events where Nelson wasn't there. You were the presenter at a real estate conference. Okay. Now, the thing was, it was at the real estate conference that you mentioned something, and it kind of like was like lightning hitting my brain there.
And I love that. I wish I could do that on command.
You had, yeah, there you go. You had a couple guests there, if it was the right time. A couple guests there. They were a younger couple. They owned a business. Okay. And they were asking about, you were telling them about how to arrange that you can recover costs from things, and that, the guy mentioned taxes. Well, damn, taxes are another part of your regular expense. It's part of your life. It's a cost you can recover. Oh, crap. And you told them, well, you start a custodial account over here, and it's paid out of there, and you pay your estimated payments. What? It blew me away. The thing Nelson told me the first time I'd seen him was you can use the money, you can borrow that, you can internally finance all your major purchases and things like that. But it wasn't until you were talking with the younger couple that owned a business that it struck me that, wait a minute, you could internally finance every ordinary expense. It doesn't have to be a capital expense, like you're not leasing equipment, you know. It doesn't have to be an investment. You don't have to grab money. And, you know, the only way people know about investing money is you grab all this money, get this giant wad of money that you had, and you pay it all. I just bought some gold. And why are you happy about that? You could have borrowed the money in that same amount, bought that same amount of gold, paid that back with payments of the cash you had in hand, you know? And in the end, you're lowering the cost basis of the gold you bought, right?
And you wind up with both. You know, most people don't understand that. To make a purchase, I don't care what it is, you've got to have capital. Well, that's so elementary, we jump over that. Okay, well, if you don't have your own capital, then you're beholden to the third-party lender, and you've got to jump through their hoops to have access to their capital, right? Because they're good numbers. So I walk people, I don't walk people through. I say this often. I'm like, look, for you to make a cash purchase, you have to have saved up cash, right? Or suddenly come into a bunch of cash. All right. Yes. And most of us don't suddenly come into a bunch of cash. So we have to save up cash to make a cash purchase. And then we have to save up cash again to make a cash purchase. And so if we play a word game and just change the name of the cash flows for a minute, and I know words have power, absolutely. So if I'm saving money to make a cash purchase, can I take that cash flow and make it a premium and pay a premium? And then I'm going to accumulate cash.
Yes.
And then instead of withdrawing the cash from a savings account to make a purchase, can I just collateralize the cash value and now create a loan repayment?
Yes.
I mean, that's very simple, right? It's very easy to say that. And so it's hard sometimes to wrap our mind around how simple it is, because we got to get past these words like life insurance.
Right.
We got to get past these words, commissions, you know, insurance agents.
I was started in real estate investing in the early 2000s, and I'd started going to some meetups in Dallas. There weren't called meetups then. Yeah. It was just once a month meeting, you know, for a real estate investor group. And so I ran across a gal there called Jackie Lang, and I also ran across her mentor, Jack Miller.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So
he's no longer with us, Jack Miller.
Man, I still got all his old tapes. I love hearing him talk, and I need to start re-listening to his stuff. But Jackie started doing, she didn't call it a podcast. It was just an audio interview, and I would download those when I was driving back and forth to work and listen to them. And one of those was you and
Eb
on talking about the infinite banking concept and Nelson Nash. And I remember listening to it. It was like an hour long. And I was like, God, I got to listen to it again. I like stuff that's different. And I like stuff that's out of, not just the normal, it's thinking differently. And then I did listen to it again. And then at some point either saw y'all speak or just got in touch with you and got some books and was reading, and you were kind enough to walk me through it. And started with my policy. Now my son and my son-in-law and daughter, they both have policies. I've got policies on 5 grandkids. And
so, you know, I wasn't sure this morning. You know, I was just trying to look at your original policy to find the date of issue, kind of thing, and that was 2012, right?
Right.
And I don't even know how many policies you have,
right?
You know, or
like I said, so. I've got mine, and I've got 5 grandkids from age 6 to 4 months. We just got Truett's set up. So
you're legitimately doing the even distribution of age classes that Nelson speaks about in this first book, or writes about, in Becoming Your Own Banker, page 71, I believe.
Wow.
Because he used to say every time a grandbaby's born, there's 4 policies fired up, you know, or 2, I'm sorry. Him and Mary purchased one on their grandchildren and their great-grandchildren, right. And then the parents would purchase them, and then really both sets of the grandparents. So a lot of policies were...
Right.
And so you're doing that, and I'm very appreciative of that, because we can talk about it all day long, you know, and it's all conversation until somebody writes a check, and you've written a lot of checks over the years. But, you know, and if I want to go, if I go back to, you know, Jackie Lang, he's a former board certified general surgeon, and he interned under DeBakey, Bentov Hospital in Houston. Okay. Great guy. He became a client, and he was a big real estate investor and still is. And then he was a client for maybe a couple of years, and he kept referring people, and he's like, oh, I want to become an agent. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So
So he became an agent, and that was my connection to Jackie Lane. Her real estate group was Eberhard. And we did a couple of phone recordings, and we did a presentation, I think, in Las Vegas or somewhere. And so that was my memory of the background. And then, too, I remember driving out to West Texas, meeting a client or something, and I had a phone call with you. Okay. And that was one of my first memories of us talking. And you know, it's a great joy to experience when the light bulb comes on with people, and then they get past the word life insurance, and they get past, you know, all of the conventional, you know, financial advice and activities, and see beyond that and what can be done with this.
Well, I like your style. I like the talks that you've given. I'm fortunate enough to see you and Nelson Nash several times. And, you know, just some of the things, one thing you told me that I've talked to, you know, sitting around the fire station table, just talking about talking about IRAs and the government sponsored plans and all that. Why don't they just cut my taxes if they want to let me? Well, maybe just cut my taxes. Just don't tax me everything.
My father did insurance.
No, I didn't know that.
And his father did insurance.
Are you serious?
Yeah, they both did. My dad tried to get me to become an agent for years and years and years. And
I had no idea. Or I don't recall that at all.
Yeah,
no. That's awesome.
Okay. Yeah. So what was really interesting is when he graduated, passed on. It was 2020. It was February of 2020. And he had a life insurance policy. He had a whole life policy.
Okay.
And, you know, he only did the minimums for it. So it was just whatever the face value was.
Probably just typical, traditional whole life.
Yeah. And he had purchased one for me when I was a child. And, you know, he sort of told me a little bit about it, but I didn't really understand any of this. I was just like, well, you know, a life insurance policy is like for whoever you leave behind, right? Like, okay, cool. I guess I'll keep paying on it.
Thanks, Dad.
Thanks, Dad. But he didn't.
Oh, he made you pay the premium too.
Well, he gifted it to me when I got to be a certain age.
Okay.
Right. And so he signed it over to me as the owner. But
did you feel like he was giving you a bill?
Kind of. Not necessarily. Like I knew that he gave me something that was important, but I didn't have any perspective on why it would be important for me. Because at the time he gave it to me, I was in my 20s.
Okay.
But I didn't think I was ever going to have kids.
Okay.
And I was just like, so what's this for? You know? Eh.
Well, Dad, you spent your life in the insurance career and the grandfather. So thank you. Okay. Right. I don't want
to. No. Not to drag around on that. But it's just to say that when he passed, you know, I didn't really have any education about it. I didn't really know much about it. You know, I thought it was for who you leave behind. I didn't realize that there was even this possibility of infinite banking. So he passes away. He leaves me an inheritance, which was generous. And I am so grateful for it because it made me have to look into how to protect finances, how to grow finances. I'd been given a gift that gave me the opportunity to change my life. And I'm a Christian woman, and I really have a tight relationship with Jesus and God. And I just kind of threw myself down and went, Lord, I don't know what to do with this.
So it's kind of like a financial gestalt therapy. You know, you've got things now you've got to be a good steward of.
Right. Yeah. And that's what that was my prayer is, Lord, teach me to be a good steward. Because what had happened right after my dad graduated, I realized I was pregnant.
Ooh.
Yeah. And, you know, and my husband and I had wanted to get married, have children. I wanted children really, really bad. And so it had been years and years and years of trying and thinking it was never going to happen. And then suddenly, boom, here we are. And I have the inheritance. Like, everything changed in a matter of weeks.
Wow.
And it was really overwhelming, but I did. I was like, Lord, what do I do? Show me, you know, because I'd been learning about, you know, how to do the stock market and how to do this and how to do that. And I'd been listening to all this stuff for years because I'd been trying to figure out how to make money and how to be able to, what do you do with it? And, oh, do you do real estate? How do you become wealthy? Right. So I'd been working on all this stuff, but then it came down to really seeing what happened in 2020 with the stock market and the dip and the people who made tons of money because they got out before because they knew it was coming. And I went, this is all just a scheme. It all feels like a scheme.
You just knew that intuitively.
Yeah.
Right. And by observation.
Just by watching.
Yeah.
And realizing they're exempt from it because, oh, they write the rules. Oh, wait a minute. What do they say about gambling? The house always wins because, wait, who's the house that writes the rules? Oh, my gosh. So yeah. That all, like, yeah. And I'm like, okay, Lord, what do I do? And within days of that, I ended up seeing all of these videos come up in my YouTube feed about Nelson Nash and the infinite banking concept. And I started watching them and I was like, what is this? So then I started learning about it and you kind of have to be open to there's something better out there. Mm-hmm. There's an alternative to what you see all the time and what's pushed on you all the time, like pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed from all these different voices that are put on pedestals and are paid lots of money to tell you certain things. So
what a coinkydink.
Interesting, right? So, yeah. So there I am learning about Nelson Nash, learning about the infinite banking concept. And I'm pretty sure you guys had like released all this stuff because it was like honoring his life because he'd passed away the year before. Right. And what was so cool about learning about him is that I heard so many parallels. Like he was a pilot. Oh, my dad was a pilot. He was an insurance agent. My dad was an insurance agent. That all these connections. And then he was talking about forestry. And I was like, when I first went to college, I went to Stephen F. Austin and I studied forestry.
Wow.
For a semester.
Classification is a big part of.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So
proper classification is important.
Yeah. And then when he's talking about thinking long term and generationally, well, that's how you have to do it when you're thinking about growing trees. And it's, yeah. So all of that to say, when I found it and I heard how it worked, and I just ate up all the information. And you know, I think I had to wait until like the second trimester of my pregnancy before it all really, you know, because baby brain is a real thing.
Okay.
But that's when over the summer that
taking
I
over all the nutrients.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Took over everything. Child right. Took over my life.
Yeah. No question.
All of a sudden I'm waking up at 5 a.m. and I'm like, what? At 9 o'clock at night, years. I'm going to sleep and I'm like, what is wrong with me? So yeah. Okay. Immediately took over my life, but he's amazing. So yeah, my son is 3.5. Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Time flies.
It does. So yes. But then I found the Nelson Nash Institute online. I looked up the people on their list and I found you and I realized you were actually pretty close to me because I live north of Fort Worth and you're here south of Fort Worth. And I was like, oh, this is cool. And so then I found your website, started listening to your stuff and reached out and we had a conversation.
And that was in 2020.
In 2020.
In short order.
Yeah.
Well, thank goodness for proximity, huh? You know.
So it was kind of a winding path, my exposure to it. And it was an indirect kind of, this was a side effect. Getting involved in the life insurance thing was a side effect of what I was really trying to accomplish. And so it began in the first step that on the path that got me here was in 2009 when I started an MBA program. And in one of the classes, the professor had us sign up for this newsletter. And it was this guy that it was mostly about finance and such, investments and what have you. And it didn't mean that much to me. And I've forgotten the name of the guy in the meantime. but it was a great writer, and he would link to other authors and stuff. And I got connected to another newsletter from that initial one. And then from there to Tom Woods. And then from Tom Woods, he started doing this podcast with Bob Murphy. Right. And so this is over multiple years, 2015, 16, 17, all that kind of stuff. And you probably know better than I do when Bob Murphy started a podcast with Carlos Lara. Right. And so I was just a big fan of Bob Murphy. And so I just started listening to that thing. I had no idea what the podcast was about. Right. And when he started talking about this life insurance and the things he does with the business recovery, I didn't know, but I was a fan of Bob. So I kept listening to him. Well, eventually he starts saying he's going to be in Fort Worth for this conference, life insurance. And right, this whole concept he was talking about, it was going to be there. Well, at this point, I thought I understood what Bob was talking about, right? The concept and all that other stuff, but it was just notional. I hadn't read anything. It was just the listening. Well, he said he's going to be in Fort Worth. And I'm like, well, hey, I'm here in San Antonio. It's not too far to Fort Worth. I'm going to go meet the guy. And so I signed up for your conference thing, went up there, and we had it was the first evening. And we were in the conference room, the hotel conference. And Bob was there, and he was meeting people, you know, shaking hands, saying hi. Nelson was there as well. And I got to shake his hand. But again, I'm just a fish out of water. I'm the new guy wandering around alone in this room. I didn't know anybody else there. Sit down. You know, we're having drinks, we're having conversation with, you know, these random people, and I'm kind of explaining my situation, where I came from, and like, I'm just here to learn, see what this is about. And when it would come down to, you know, it's this life insurance thing and we're using it for such and such, every person said, I wish I had started earlier. So it was intriguing. Everybody was, you know, excited about it. You know, and we go through the presentation or whatever. That's the when I first saw and purchased the book, right? Becoming Your Own Banker. Went home and read that. And honestly, it wasn't too long afterwards where I called you and we started the process.
That's pretty interesting. 2009 MBA program.
Mm-hmm.
Reading newsletters and went to one newsletter, and then another newsletter led you to Tom Woods, and that's pretty cool. Tom Woods, Bob Murphy, friends. Bob was a guest on Tom Woods' show many times, and then Bob started his own podcast, and then Carlos Lara, you know, the businessman, and he's still a board director, a co-director of the Nelson Nash Institute, Carlos Lara. Mm-hmm. And then that was 2017, I believe, that we hosted that. And at that time, and this is, you know, just history, really. But at that time, Nelson was winding down away from giving his 10-hour presentations. And they were, the Nelson Nash Institute was developing a program where that could be sponsored across the country, right? And so now, James Nether, yours truly, sponsored the first one in 2017. They did a couple of other pilot things unsponsored around the country. So that was it. If I knew that, I just forgot. But, I mean, that's very interesting. Thank you for sharing that. That brings back a lot of memories for me.
The process of getting to an IBC lifestyle was a journey. I think everybody could agree with that.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, the team here, everybody, it's like family.
Well, thank you for saying that. And that's kind of really what I'd like to hear personally is, like, how did you even get exposed to the idea of becoming your own banker, that you could possibly even
control the banking function and what that meant, you know, however far back you'd like to go, please take us and just bring us up to date if you would, sir.
Yeah. So family started restaurant businesses. So the entrepreneurial side of us was always alive and well. When I graduated from Indiana University, moved down to Dallas, you know, sky was the limit. I thought, you know, here I am going to break out of the mold of Indiana and start a new life in Dallas. And, you know, it was remarkable. I got a great opportunity in the orthopedic space. And I remember sitting there running the budget and I was like, man, this income that I'm making is, it's awesome. And then you start trickling down and you're like, well, okay, maybe I won't have the full package on cable. And so it's humbling to know that you got to start somewhere. But in that regard, I was like, all right, I'm going to be reading the Wall Street Journal. I'm going to be this financial expert. I'm going to do great things and, you know, be the, you know, early retire. And it just does not always work out that way. I always laugh. I was thinking about this call. It's like my Wall Street Journal subscription showed up at night. Like, so it was almost 12 hours past due on all the other stuff. So I was like, all right, maybe
I'm not staying ahead of the curve.
I'm not staying ahead of the curve on this one. But I also was in the back of my mind, there was always something saying like, you know, to truly invest in something or put your money safely into something, you should really know a lot about it. And the humbling fact is even the stocks that you'd pick or you buy, you're like, you know, somebody could come up to me on the street and say, hey, I know you invest in company X, like, who's the CEO? And then you're like, well, I can answer that question. And then CEOs change and whatnot. So it's truly hard to delineate what's going on with each company that you're investing in. And so I was at a function. It was probably, I want to say maybe a chamber of commerce. And this guy comes up to me with wild hair, kind of looked like Doc Brown. And it was just, and he started telling me about whole life policies. And I was 20 some years old at the time. And, you know, I read Becoming Your Own Banker.
From that conversation,
I read it. I was like, it makes sense. I bought a policy. I don't even remember what the premium was. It was, you know, it was higher than if I would have just done term. And I did it. And because I don't think this podcast, I don't think what everybody was trying to do in communicating, it wasn't out there. So there's all the noise telling me whatever I just did was the wrong thing.
Well, how long ago was that?
If I'm 40, it was over 20 years ago. And so anyways, I got cold feet. I canceled the policy. Mr. Mad Scientist guy was not happy with me. And then I was like, I kind of just shelved it for a while. I did the whole 401k. I was a 1099 for, you know, 80% of my working career. So I was like, you know, yes, I could put a lot of money in my 401k, but at the end of the day, there wasn't that much money to put in. I wasn't getting the match. And so it's kind of like there's just that burning desire to go on. I want to do something that doesn't require me to be an absolute, like, on top of what the company's doing. Are they supporting the things that I'm interested in? And I don't remember where I stumbled across, but I said, Sarah and I were considering starting a franchise. This is pre-COVID.
Oh yeah.
And so, you know, orthopedics, I always joke, like, 1 year is normal for people. An ortho rep will age about 8 years for every 1 year that normal people do, just from the stress of the job. So it's like, you know, I can't do this till I'm 70 years old. So we've got to figure out something, hedge our bets and find something else.
And so I'm in this small group Bible study, okay? And we're talking about the book of Revelation in the end times, okay? And talking about Israel and the book of Daniel and Ezekiel, and really great guy who was very studied in that, Larry, and he's even written his own notes on it, and I still get information from him to this day. And during that discussion, I came across this book called The Middle East Meltdown. I don't know if anybody's ever read that book, but in that book, my first experience with a term called the petrodollar. I had no idea what the petrodollar was. if they mentioned that in school, that was one of those days I missed, but I'm pretty sure they didn't bring it up.
Yeah, they didn't bring it up.
And so that got me digging into what was that all about? And then, you know, you can go out on crazy trails over different wars and why things happened or whatever. But regardless, I got exposed to fiat currencies and centralized banking. I had heard the term fiat currency, but I never knew what that meant.
They didn't teach that in school either.
They didn't really spend much time talking about that. No. Looking back, you can see where that Pink Floyd song came from, just another brick in the wall. Man, oh man, there's some depth there. I'm not even sure those guys knew what lyrics they were writing, but if you apply that to the system, wow. But anyway, so I find out what fiat currencies are. I find out what centralized banking was. So I get really into it. And my poor family, I mean, my wife and kids, they had to listen to Dad go through this. And so it was just something I found natural interest in. And you can probably tell from my body language, I still get excited about it today. It's just something I'm passionate about. And so, because I didn't know. I didn't really know what was going on and how it worked. And I know some great people that are bankers. And I don't think they know what's going on. And to this day, I appreciate them. We have close relationships with all of our vendors. They're great people. But once I figured out that, I was on a journey to go, okay, then what's the answer? Like, if all of this is a problem, what's the answer? And then I'm on a business trip, vacation trip, both, and we're out of the country and we're driving around in this car and my kids are listening to me talk about what I've learned about centralized banking and centralized banks and fiat currencies and all these things.
Driving around in the car, so you have a captive audience.
And I'm way across the world. I'll just put it that way. And, you know, I'm a good business guy and I'm stewarding money and checking it all the time and making sure there's no fraud and all these things. And that was a year in 2019 where the interest rates on money markets were doing pretty well. I don't remember what it was. Let's say it's 2 or 3% or whatever, right? And running businesses and having payroll, you've got to keep capital on hand. And if you sign on to the concept of being solvent and not leveraged, you know, especially after my excavating stint, I really was anti-debt. And so we would keep a lot of cash on hand to carry us, you know, and make payroll and do those things. So at various times through the year, we would have a decent amount of cash. It's all relative, but sitting in the bank. And that year, the money market was paying pretty good money. And so we were out of the country and I checked the bank and they had made a deposit on an interest payment. And I thought, hey, that's a pretty decent amount of money. And not that I had never paid attention to interest, but I thought, that's pretty crazy. Now, when I was 18 years old, one of my clients, who still plays a major role in my life now, they let me do landscaping at their house, their new house, big house at the time. Should have never let a kid do it. We did it right, but I mean, there's no way I should have had that job. He encouraged me to start an IRA. Mm-hmm. His dad was in the business. They were in the insurance business and investment business there in Indianapolis. Great, great people. And I'm so thankful he helped me develop the habit of saving. Okay. Now, if I had it to do all over again, and he would have agreed with me, ironically, I would have started an insurance policy, right? A properly structured, dividend paying, whole life cash value policy with a mutually owned company. All right. I've got that ingrained in my head. I would have done that. And I would encourage anyone, regardless of your age, but especially the younger you are, go seek that out. That is not common knowledge, but it is very normal to do. And if you go back a few generations, our grandparents and great-grandparents used those vehicles to store their assets. Well, he got me started on that. And I was so thankful, you know, but I was really anti-stock market. And what I have found out since then is a lot of business owners are, because it's not tangible. And we know that typically we can do better returns than what the stock market's doing, and we've got control over it, right? So you hear some of these things that fit right into the infinite banking concept.
Thank you for joining us on the Banking with Life podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe and click on that little notification bell. Otherwise, join us on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher for weekly content.